Well, I'll use the expression because that's what we're going to do. We're talking about water today, and we're going to dive into the growing concerns that we have. Montana's exempt wells laws, right? There's some loopholes in there, and some say that loophole is being used, and it's aiding the rapid spread of subdivisions across places like the Gallatin Valley, Helena area, and other places across Montana. Landowners, farmers, homeowners inside these developments say water shortages, the declining well performance, water quality, these concerns are becoming impossible to ignore. So we're going to talk about that. We're going to pick up this issue here about this debate over exempt wells in Montana. We're seeing a lot. Well, this lawsuit has kind of intensified this as well, suing the Department of Natural Resources and Conservation. And that's the right place to go. The current water system allows unregulated groundwater development that could threaten water quality, they say, and quantity and senior water rights. And we'll get into that here. Carly Johnson is with us, director of the State Government Affairs Division for the Montana Farm Bureau Federation. On top of this, they're a part of this lawsuit, which includes conservation groups as well as ag groups and even the League of Cities and Towns is on this group on this lawsuit, I should say. And then Walt Sales is going to join us. He is a former legislator, served in the Montana Senate, served in the Montana House of Representatives. That began in 2017. And he is in the Gallatin Valley, an ag producer, and has senior water rights. And his family's transitioning, succession planning. So congratulations on that, Walt. And we'll talk about the groundwater pressures and the development pressures that he's facing. First of all, good morning, Carly. How are things?
Good morning. It's a beautiful day here in north central Montana.
Love it.
Happy birthday, Tom.
Oh, thank you, Carly. I appreciate that. You're not going to sing, are you? That's you can.
I will not sing on the radio.
Okay.
I'll save all of us that embarrassment.
I would bet a year's pay that Walt Sales is not going to sing on the radio, too.
The only place you'll hear me singing is in my tractor.
Nice. That's good. That's all is right with the world then, Walt, in that regard. Thank you for coming on. Carly, what's the issue?
So I think the best place to start is the easiest way to explain exempt wells is with an analogy that I think we can all appreciate. Exempt wells are sort of like an open bar. Right? Open bars work great at the beginning of the night, but as the night goes on, you realize that somebody's probably going to have to pay the tab and we're probably going to run out of booze. And we're getting to a place in Montana where we're getting towards the end of the night. And it's becoming a reality that senior water rights holders and the resource, our rivers and water availability, are the ones left paying the tab. And, we're running out of booze, and homeowners are paying tens of thousands of dollars for a cup in the form of a well that they may not have a drink to put in. So we're at a place where it's time to contemplate, how do we transition from an open bar system to something different? And we're not advocating to close down the bar completely. That's certainly not something we would do as hefty supporters of barley growers, but we are advocating for drinking more responsibly. And I think that there's some ways that we can do that, and we can certainly dig into some of those a little bit later.
Before we talk with Walt about how it is impacting him on the ground, tell us what an exempt well is. Tell us why we have legislation that allows the exemption on these wells.
Yeah, so an exempt well is a well that was initially intended for small uses. So it has to be under 35 gallons a minute, and it can only go up to 10 acre feet a year. 10 acre feet, if you think about, you know, an acre as being about a football size, you're talking about 10 feet deep of water. So that's how much water it is, a pretty large volume potentially. And it was originally intended for small uses that were so small it was unlikely to impact anybody else. So think about an isolated stock well or an isolated home. But what has happened is that they've been started to be used for development. So about 72% of exempt wells are for domestic uses, which would be in-home, domestic and lawn and garden type uses. And so we've gotten to where there's a lot more than what we thought there would be. So it's difficult to say exactly how many, and we can dig into that a little bit more later, but there was a 2024 district court decision where the judge dug into and estimated how many exempt wells there were in the state. And he estimated there was between 128,000 and 191,000 exempt wells that were entitled to withdraw between 417 and 622 billion gallons of water annually. So to put that in perspective, Tom, if you went to the stream gauge on the lower Yellowstone in Billings, and you diverted between 2 and 6.5 months of those winter flows, that's how much water we're talking about.
Right. And that's so good. And that goes underneath the radar. I mean, there's no accounting for that outside of the fact, no real accounting outside of the fact that if the well goes dry, then you know your numbers are shy, so to speak. And I know there's more nuances to it than that. Walt Sayles, and congratulations, Walt, in having the family transitioning into ownership of the ranch property and passing on that legacy. That's got to be, it's no small thing, and it's got to do a man or a woman's heart real good to see that happening. This exempt wells in your area, the Gallatin Valley, which has been really hard hit by housing prices and housing development, talk about the impact there. And then, I suppose there's a lot of worry as your family is taking over the property.
Yeah, no, you're exactly right, Tom. And it is. It's a true blessing, right, to have that next generation, one, being willing, and then two, being stepping up and accepting, right, not only the opportunity, but the challenges that we're facing. And our water rights, right, I mean, in this valley, as you know, I mean, to be able to keep in agriculture is quite a challenge. And water, I mean, our whole place is irrigated, and are some of our most senior water rights go back to 1865 from my first homestead, Walter Sayles, all the way down now, right, to over 100 years waiting. And some of the challenges, Tom, that I've seen, I started probably paying a little more attention 20 years ago on this issue and going back through some of the older papers that I've gotten from my work with different water committees at the state level. We've addressed this, but have not come to any viable solutions. We've looked at other states, how they handle it. But you're exactly right when our farm is based on the value of that irrigation water, that property right, and when we have to go through permitting, and which is a fair process, right, and the adverse effect, constitutionally protected, all of that makes great sense. But then on the other side of the fence, when you can irrigate hundreds of acres of lawn and use the exemption, it just doesn't seem to balance. And I do remember a few years ago in front of a committee using the analogy of a hole in my fence and the neighbor's cows coming in. At first, it's just one or two cows. It's not that big a deal. And then the next week, it's a few more and a few more. And then pretty soon I go there and there's more cows from my neighbors on my pasture than my own. And eventually you have to fix the problem. And truly, 20 years later, it's duly time to fix this problem. And as Carly stated, we're not trying to get rid of the original intent of the de minimis use, but the proliferation and abuse to existing water users.
Yeah. Carly, how do you do that?
I think the answer lies in the permitting process. You know, there's a lot of really good nuggets there that Walt sort of touched on. That process is designed to protect senior water right holders and allow for new development. And so that means that there's a lot of science that you've got to do to make sure that what other water users you might be affecting. There's a notice and objection process in that for other water users to stand up and say, hey, I don't think you thought about this, and this could affect my constitutionally protected property right. So let's figure out a way to address that together. And then it also has a process in place for addressing adverse effects through mitigation. And I know that's something that they've talked about some in the Gallatin on mitigation, Could you talk a little bit about what that process has looked like for you guys, Walt, and kind of what you're seeing as this mitigation buds, if you will?
Right. Yeah. Yeah. No, exactly. Right. I mean, through 831, those that are, you know, familiar with that process and how that was set up on the permitting to address adverse effect, then any of that can be mitigated to get your permit. And so it's not a new concept, but it takes years, right, to sort of get it built and maybe agreed upon the parties to be an allowable acceptance of sort of the new Montana. But mitigation, and we're working with the Montana Water Trust here in the Valley on setting up water banking, and that, again, it's in the infancy stages, but we're at least addressing and trying to fix and manage the resource to where we can balance that growth and existing use. So where there is water available, it could be mitigated, and being able to be in that bank to hit some of those adverse effects and still provide for, again, the existing use and the new use.
Carly, do you have stakeholders on board with solutions like that?
We're working with the Senior Water Rights Coalition, which is a broad coalition of senior water rights holders. And we're just in the beginning stages of kind of talking through what this might look like. So we've reached out to some other groups, and we're certainly willing to work together on that. I don't see there to be a lot of downside in addressing ways to simplify the permitting process, even if you totally disagree on exempt wells. Fixing the permitting process is good for everybody. It's good for senior water right holders. It's good for new uses. And I think that there's a lot of opportunity to be able to address that.
And nice article written, an op-ed about this, where you talk about Montana is at a crossroads. That's on our Northern Ag Network, northernag.net. For more information on that as well. We're going to peel into that here a little bit and talk about some of these caveats about it. Montana at a crossroads, I think that's it's important to note here too. And what is this crossroads? Well, it's probably bigger than just protecting senior water rights and continuing the use of exempt wells. We're talking about lifestyle and preserving our way of life here as well, and still supporting the growth of our rural communities. Exempt wells. Opponents argue developers have used exempt wells to build high-density subdivisions that circumvent normal water right review and avoid expensive municipal water systems. And there's a lawsuit out there, which the Montana Farm Bureau Federation is a part of. They're going to argue thousands of individual wells are creating major groundwater impacts, and senior water right holders may lose access or pressure. And there's also an issue now about water quality with septic systems if there's too many. Carly and Walt, thank you guys both for being here. Take some time to kind of explain this a little bit. So and I think we've done a fair job of it. We're facing, as you note in your op-ed, a crossroads here in Montana that has a lot to do with preserving our way of life, but also welcoming the new development across the state. A lot of that happening in these rural areas. Walt Sales has experienced some of that. Solutions, all right? This goes through the DNRC, and maybe, Carly, you talk about, you kind of hit on that again. What are some of those avenues to getting remediation here?
So solutions moving forward, is that what?
Yeah.
Okay. So solutions moving forward would be to find a way to use the permitting process for small uses. So we've never really contemplated the idea that these smaller uses, these that would have traditionally been exemptions, would go through the permitting process. And there are a few simple things that I think we can do. Like right now, the application for the permitting process is 41 pages and it's written in engineer, which makes sense when you're talking about the kind of permits that we've done before for things like communal water systems or larger scale irrigation projects, where, like, from my perspective as a rancher, you're going to have an engineer involved anyways, because you need to figure out what size pump to use for your pivot, right? And so it's not a big deal to have them fill out the paperwork. But if you're talking about a small isolated home or a small stock tank, There's not going to be an engineer involved. So we're working with DNRC to see if there's ways that we can simplify even just the language in the application. And then we're looking at if it is for a small use and it truly doesn't affect anyone, it shouldn't be difficult to get a permit. So where are there places where we can balance protecting senior water rights and taking some of the burden off of new uses?
Where is it hitting? We noted the Gallatin Valley, Helena. Carly, where is it really making an impact?
The Gallatin, the Bitterroot, the North Valley and Helena are some of the hot topic areas. But I think one of the challenges that we see is if you stop development in one place like that, I use my own hometown of Shoto as an example. I mean, you stop development in the North Valley. You say no more exempt wells. You can't do that here. Well, it just pushes it out, right? It doesn't actually address the problem in ensuring that we're protecting senior water right holders all across the state. So if we can find a way where there is available water to make sure that development is easy and we can responsibly develop in a way that matches our resource availability, that's important.
Yes.
And that's how we balance the traditional Montana values of wide open spaces and water in the rivers and this new Montana too, where we've got thousands of new neighbors, which is also a joy, right? Yeah. Like that's a good thing that people want to live here.
Walt, give us your sense of that as well. Go ahead. Yeah, you're in.
Yeah, that's exactly right. You know, I mean, Lewistown's a great example, right? They're going to see some new growth, and which is, in one hand, a great thing, but balancing and respecting the natural resource, right, the finite water, getting ahead of that curve. Again, just like Carly said, that's the Montana way, and we're at an opportunity or a crossroads, as you've said, to protect that and be different than other states. And my time in Helena, I do see that as still as something that we can come together on and truly take value in and pride in, being up at the top of the watershed and protecting that use and still expand it, but do it in a reasonable and respective way, no different than we do on our own farms, right? Our stocking rates. And we know what we can do and when we can push and when we need to cut back. And we have a plan in place, and that's what our state needs to do.
How much is known, because you've been a member, I think, of an irrigation association there.
Right, yep. Yeah. Aggie, the Association of Gallatin Agricultural Irrigators, yep.
Yeah, so how long has this been on your plate then, and how strong is the push going to be for some resolution?
Right. No, and it has. It's been, Tom, for over 20 years. You know, looking back, we've tried to find a solution, and we continued to try and try until finally it became to where it was truly affecting. I mean, our river commissioner came on this March, which, for those that don't know, he's the police, sort of the water cop, that makes sure that the senior water can get his water before the prior, which we're talking 1890 as a junior use to protect those 1865s. And normally he'll come at the end of June, early July, but in March he had to come in. So this issue finally has risen to where we need a solution.
And Carly, I got a 2.5 minutes here, so you know we still have time. This solution, so to speak, I'm curious as to where, you know, what the status is of this lawsuit, and what when you talk about water laws, it just seems to be so complicated. Can you simplify this?
I can try. Water laws are certainly complicated, and I think there's an important note to that. Part of the reason why water law is so complicated is because you're talking about state laws that have to be implemented across different water basins that are so different. And you want the solutions to be flexible enough that they can be localized. So that's why it gets really complicated. But there are a few things that I think we all know that we want, right? And one of those is fairness. And that's one of the things that the lawsuit brings up as a challenge. So as the senior water right holder or a permittee, you go through these series of processes. So for senior water rights, it's adjudication. For permits, that is the permitting process. And none of that gets finalized until they're all reconciled together and all of the water users have been notified and have agreed that this is the amount of water that each person's going to use and this is how they're going to use it.
How strong?
Exempt wells.
Go ahead.
Exempt wells skip that, both those processes,
yeah,
and they just go to the end. And there isn't an opportunity for other water users to talk about it.
If you can take 10 seconds on this or 15, whatever. How strong is the constitutional protections for water right users in Montana?
Well, it's specifically named in the Constitution that senior water right holders are constitutionally protected private property, right?
Yeah, yeah. So there's a leg to stand on. Yeah, there's quite a leg to stand on. Carly, we'll be following this, right? Status of the lawsuit is just kind of just getting underway, right?
Yes. Yep. And then I think the other thing that maybe we'll have to talk about next time is water storage. Yeah. As a headwater state, we have an opportunity to collect a lot of the water that leaves the state during spring runoff.
Carly Johnson, Montana Farm Bureau Federation, Walt Sales. Thank you both. Appreciate it.
Thanks for joining us for the podcast. And join us weekdays live from 9 a.m. to 10 a.m. for more Voices of Montana on great radio stations all across our Treasure State.